Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. So I got some bad news. Well, you know, I was at the Memphis Tiger game on Saturday, and someone stopped me and said, hey, I'm retired now, so I get to listen to your show every day. Jeffy, another, by the way, advantage of retirement. You know, I mean, there's the whole not having to work for the man for your living, grinding away and soul-crushing work and having your life be your own, and that's a plus. But maybe not as great as being able to listen to all 2 hours of the Jeff Calkins show. So that was good. But he went on to say, he said, and the segment that I never, ever miss is Fish on Friday on Tuesday. And so I told him I'd pass that compliment along to Charles, because that's how we pay him.
Exactly. Right? We'll raise his pay.
We pay him in the occasional compliment. If you all want to compliment him on X, C. Fishman on Twitter or X, tell him how much you appreciate it, because that's how he gets paid. You know, our ad folks could sell that segment. You know,
they could.
It is the hottest segment, really, on local radio, Fish on Friday on Tuesday. And a whole bunch of people, I would think, would want to sponsor it, right? All the area that, well, hell, how about the University of Memphis, right? Like, anyone who
Memphis Business Journal,
Memphis, yeah, whatever. Anyone who believes in who actually appreciates
Wall Street
actual
Journal
insight might want to sponsor that segment. But anyway, here's the bad news for that gentleman. He can't be on today. Yeah, something came up. I know. You know what it's like? It's like going to a Grizzlies game and fighting out Jaws and playing, right? It's very similar. You're like, okay. So who is playing the role of John Conchar today, or Scottie Pippen Jr.? A young Peter Calkins is going to be joining us.
Our analytics department.
Our basketball analytics department is going to be joining us in the wake of that frustrating loss last night. So today on the radio show, we'll be talking about all manner of things. But we're gonna have Chris Harrington, not Fish Harrington. That would be a sort of merger of two human beings into one really interestingly named.
Yes.
But not that different. Both thoughtful human beings.
Brilliant writers.
Fish Harrington,
yes,
could be a great name for someone in a movie, though. You know, in a novel, whatever, Fish Harrington. Anyway, we're going to have Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then our analytics department, our basketball analytics department, Peter Calkins is going to join us at 10:30.
The boys aren't going Sunday, are they?
Or
to Buffalo.
No. My son's,
yeah,
going to Buffalo to this game? No, we're not going to the game. I'll be honest, like,
oh, I bring
the get in what? Derrick Henry has a pulled groin.
I wish it were something that exciting. Aaliyah ordered the Zubas pants.
Oh.
And they're going to be in on Sunday.
Oh, that's exciting. That is exciting.
So she's ready for divisional round.
That should be the edge that the
she
Bills
is ready
need
for divisional round.
Anyway, I lament in particular. So we got Harrington, and then we got our analytics department. No Fish on Friday, on Tuesday. I lament particularly that Fishman isn't going to be here, because we got a whole bunch of stuff we could be talking to him about, including the fires continue and supposedly those damn winds picking up again. Absolutely devastating what is going on over there. I was reading today about how hard it is to contain these fires. And typically, evidently, what you find a safe spot away from the wind, and then you
the calf at Pepperdine,
and then you and then you no and then the what the firefighters do is they
oh,
try
yeah
to create these, you know, these zones on the edges of the fire by clearing out the underbrush,
yep,
right, clearing out anything that could burn,
yep,
to contain them. Like, that's what you do. And then, and the problem is it was in one story I was reading is that when there are these winds, these fires, the quote was, these fires don't travel by ground. They travel by air.
Yeah.
So you can do whatever the hell you want. And
this is why the one that raged my freshman year, the reason why it was so bad was it was also during the Santa Ana winds.
Yeah. And so you could have you clear out all the underbrush, whatever, if there's embers and sparks and massive amounts of flame being blown through the air, landing other places. It was also pointed out that, you know what, you know what burns really nicely? Houses and drapes and furniture, and like it's all feeds the fire as well. Anyway, we could talk to him about that. And then there's this new story, Jeffrey, that Elon Musk may end up with TikTok. Have you been following this?
Not as closely as you have.
Well, I'm not going to get into it, but it does appear that TikTok may be banned. If you had listened to the or read about the Supreme Court arguments last week, and this is what happens. You sort of listen to the questions and see which way the justices seem to be leaning, right?
Sure.
Can you discern from their questions which how they're going to rule? And most people seem to think that they will rule that the government has a compelling interest, a sufficiently compelling interest to ban TikTok. Now, they can't make people come in and take TikTok off your phone. That's not what's going to happen. Not your phone. Are you on TikTok?
No.
No. Or not on my phone. But they can't do that. All they really can do, they can ban updates, though.
Sure.
And then it will slowly...
eventually die.
Degrade.
Yeah.
Right. Like all of us, like human beings,
yes.
Really, and die. But anyway, one of the... And so what the law provides is that the Chinese government or the Chinese company has to divest TikTok in order for TikTok to survive. And one of the ideas is that Elon Musk could take it over. Elon Musk has a, unlike many in the Trump administration, he has a very close relationship to China.
Yes.
Right? Is in the good graces of China and vice versa. So anyway, maybe we'll have a special Fish on Friday on Tuesday later this week. If not, we'll have that many more things to talk to him about next week. So no fish on Friday. On Tuesday, we do have tonight whoever would have imagined that there would be so much attention on a school board meeting?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I mean, I've been here since 96, and this is not the first time that the school board has been in turmoil or there has been a mess around Memphis City Schools. But this is the first time that everyone seems to have an opinion on it, and everyone's weighing in on it, and literally there's nothing bigger happening in Memphis today than the meeting tonight to discuss whether Dr. Marie Fagans will be fired.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go and I may write about it. One of the things that I have been able to discern, though, is that, as I said when I covered the last meeting, 100% of the people who spoke are Fagans supporters. And everyone thinks the school board's complete idiots, right? And that seems to be true no matter where you look. The county commission, whether you look state politicians, whether you look left, right, whoever it is you're talking to, they're like, I can't believe those morons on the school board are doing this to the superb educator, Dr. Marie Fagans.
Yes.
And I'll say this. I do think there's another side. And I have talked to enough people with enough knowledge about the workings of the school system who think she's a disaster. Toxic, in over her head, vindictive, hollowed out the central office. In other words, anyone was going to have to make cuts because the stimulus money was gone. But I've talked to a bunch of people who say, listen, if I were looking at this from the outside, I'd be saying, listen, why don't they give this woman a chance? They don't get it. They don't get it. Now, having said that, it is indisputable that the school board has done a horrible job of making that case. They have successfully martyred her. They have successfully rallied everyone to her cause.
Yes.
But it is interesting. Like, if you go to the comment and look at the comment section of the Daily Memphian, which I heard you do, entertaining, everyone's like, go, Dr. Fagans, go, Dr. Fagans, screw you, school board. And what a lot of it is based in is, first of all, a total lack of knowledge of what's actually happening. And I can say that because I have entered into this with much of the same lack of knowledge. None of us know if she's good or bad. We haven't seen her work. We haven't whatever. But then a lot of it is grounded in a deep loathing of the school system. And so the mere fact that she fired a bunch of people has caused people to say, you go, fire those people. And in fact, while the school system has been for a long period of time dysfunctional, overbloat, whatever, all of that, there are in fact good people who have worked there, who've given their lives over to public education. And a lot of those good people, the good people, have been either forced out or fled to either the county schools or Mississippi schools or into consulting or whatever. At least this is the story that is told to me. Now, again, I don't know the truth of it. I don't know the answer. And I would argue that wherever you're sitting listening to this, unless you are deeply embedded in school issues, I suspect you don't know either. You just have an instinct that if she's firing people, she must be good. The problem is that they have made such a colossal mess of trying to get rid of her, an out-of-the-blue special meeting to discuss her firing originally, and then coming up with what appears to be sort of trumped-up allegations to get rid of her, that this is, it's becoming no win, and they're creating an excuse for the state to take over the damn thing. And so it is a mess, and I didn't necessarily expect to be talking about the school board here today, but that is here, weirdly enough, it is the biggest thing that is happening in Memphis today. We'll get to the other big thing that happened last night, and I think we can sum up the sentiments around last night's game, Jeffrey, from the masses. Maybe I'm over. Maybe I'm just paying attention to a few to some of the chatter on X. But I think you should just fire Taylor Jenkins today, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean that seems to always be the simplest answer.
I think the answer is probably just like while we're firing Dr. Marie Fagans.
While we're here
and firing everybody, I mean, let's see, we're firing the DA, we're firing the head of the school system. I think just throw him on the pile, right?
And the good news is, if you fire him, he's unlikely to sue.
People aren't going to rally.
Correct.
They're not going to get a rallying for Taylor Jenkins. So I think time to fire Taylor Jenkins. Listen, it was how would you describe the loss last night? Frustrating, disappointing, irritating.
The first word that came more to mind was aggravating.
I think that's right. I like aggravating even more than frustrating. I was landing on frustrating, but I think aggravating is exactly it.
Because there's the Dylan factor, and it's just like, even though Dylan wasn't the reason they won, it's just his presence is just aggravating.
Is that what's aggravating to you?
And they make it a street fight, and they punk us.
It's tough to be punked. And there's no question. It happens once, then it happens again, then it happens again. You're so crap. You want to beat them badly because they are beating you up. They are punking you. Honestly, like Dylan isn't that likable. The head coach isn't that likable, right? I mean, you know, certainly he was smearing Marc Gasol last week.
He's not likable. I do have a begrudging respect for him.
Oh, totally. Totally. You'd love him if you were head coach.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Because he's both appears to be a tough guy and, this is the unfortunate part, good at his job.
I would say he's a winner.
Right? Good at his job. So really aggravating, yes. Right? Like really aggravating.
It just
the worst.
Yes.
But then all of them, like there's waves of them who are bullying you and it just gets incredibly aggravating. And on top of it, last night, it appeared as if this was going to be your night.
Yes.
I mean, there were two moments when you're like, the Empire Strikes Back. Is that the right reference? Is it whatever? Like, the one Desmond Bane.
Well, I mean, I don't know if we want to be considered the Empire, but
okay, fire. Okay, never mind. Well, do you tell me, when Desmond Bane is hits that shot.
Although I would argue the Empire, all they did was bring peace and prosperity to the galaxy as well as stability. But
when
he
hits that shot and is barking at Dylan,
yes.
Right? And then when Ja, in particular, when Ja hits the three-pointer from nearly half court,
yeah.
You're like, okay.
It's our night.
This is it. Grizzlies are going to win. The Grizzlies are going to win finally. You take that win over Minnesota, which was so magnificent, and then you pair it with this one.
Nice. That was a nice little two. Yeah.
And then it all fell apart. And, yes, a lot of the discussion has been about Taylor Jenkins. And I'll just say this. It's the nature of It is the nature of being a head coach of a team that is very successful, but not most successful.
Yep.
Right.
And it's also a byproduct of anytime you get into a close game, what's the thing you can always criticize the most easily?
But if you are Dan Quinn or something,
sure.
and you do something dumb this year or whatever, and the team falls short, no one's going to care.
No.
They just look at, oh, look what happened.
Look at how they overachieved. They won 12 games.
Whereas if you're Mike Tomlin, they can say, we got into the playoffs again. We never have had a losing record, but enough already. He's not the guy who can take us over the top, right?
Yep.
And so that's just the nature of it. When you get to this level, and as you have said many times, that's what the money's for, right?
Yep.
I mean, there's no question. And I do think it is fair to point to two things that I would quibble with. The one, weirdly, at the end of the game, as the Grizzlies were trailing, had the ball, he could have taken a timeout. He had two timeouts. He could have taken a timeout to advance the ball and did not. And you wonder if he was just overreacting to the last game when he did call a timeout. But here what happened was they immediately fouled. Honestly, Houston screwed up by fouling Ja too soon.
Yeah.
They should have waited a little bit longer. But he knew the Houston fouls when the Grizzlies are down three.
Yes.
Like, that's what they do. We just saw it, right? If you advance the basketball, you can inbound the ball to someone in shooting position to take that away.
Well, and so I was fine with the decision because the problem that I had with it was almost like the team was expecting him to take a timeout because they were standing around. Right after, they could have inbounded and had some chaos and been able to get a three, because I thought the only way they were going to get a three off was if they just played it out.
I don't know. I thought it was objectively the wrong decision. Now, what Taylor's...
I do agree with you, though. I think, so there's two timeout decisions this weekend that stand out to me. I'm including last night in this weekend. So Todd Bowles, a couple of weeks ago, did use a timeout against the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football, and the Bucks scored right before the half with like 45 seconds left.
Yeah.
But because he called the timeout and he left so much time, if the Cowboys get to midfield, Brandon Aubrey's in field goal range. And it allowed the Cowboys to get a field goal. And so I thought on Sunday night, remember at the end of the first half, when it was like, what are they doing? Like the clock was running. And he finally took a timeout with like 17 seconds left, but they wasted like 15 seconds. First off, they scored. It didn't matter anyway. But I think that was a direct reflection of, I called a timeout too early.
Right.
I called a timeout too early a couple of weeks ago. I think this is the same thing. I think it's the, I called the timeouts last week. And
a lot of discussion of timeouts, honestly, this week. And people criticize Mike Tomlin for not calling more timeouts. They were down two scores to the Ravens. Anyway, I thought it was the wrong decision by Taylor Jenkins. What he said was two things in the postgame. He said, I didn't know they were going to foul, which seems silly, given that their clear history is that in this situation they're going to foul. And then he secondly said is that he had a play in his back pocket to force a turnover after the foul shots. So whatever. Even then, I don't understand why you wouldn't go ahead and advance the basketball. Whatever. The bigger criticism of Taylor Jenkins has to do with, here we are again, ladies and gentlemen, player deployment. And it, in particular, has to do with the end of the game. So the Grizzlies are up 103-94. That's a nice lead, Jeffrey, with 7:31 left. That is when Jalen Wells subs in for Ja. Okay? Not long after, at the seven-minute mark, Jaren leaves for Brandon Clark. And at that point, they're still up 8. Okay, so with 7 minutes left, they're up 8, and no Ja and no Jaren on the floor. Now, Chris has previously criticized or wondered why there should be ever a moment when one of the three isn't on the floor, right? Dez was for this period. Dez was on the floor, and in fairness, Jaren sat out for a minute and 3 seconds. He was back in a minute and 3 seconds. He was back in at 5:57. Okay?
I think that was when Zach fouled out.
It was in that period, and honestly, it was Jaren sitting out. It was in that period that the lead is cut from 103.95 to 105.102. Jaren is out for a minute and 3 seconds, and that happens. When Ja comes back at 4:57, so he has sat out for 2 minutes and 34 seconds, the Grizzlies' lead is down to one. So it went from 9-1 while those two were variously, for Ja the entire time, for Jaren just a minute, basically, he was out. The lead is cut from 9-1. And there you go. That's the source of the criticism. Now, big picture, Ja, who was questionable because he was sick, played 37 minutes. Bane played 34. Jaren played 30, but let's be honest, Jaren was purely for a foul trouble. Like that was, Jaren had to sit. He ended up foul, so he didn't foul out. But Jaren was, his minutes were limited by foul trouble.
I've looked it up and can confirm. The 37 minutes was Ja's highest minute total of the year.
Highest total of the year.
By 3 minutes.
Still coming back from injury.
Yep.
And questionable because he was sick. So, I don't know.
There was one other moment I'd like to submit.
Can I argue?
All right.
That sure, in the waning moments, it would be nice if two of the three were always on the floor, right? Yes?
Yeah.
As opposed to, yes, I can. But let me, I do think this is a little obsessive. If that is his minutes high of the year, and he's sick, okay, let's say he sat out some more minutes in the second quarter. You know, it's still 37 minutes he played, but it was some other minutes. Would they then have had the 9-point lead? I don't think the story of that game, maybe others disagree. I don't think the story of that game was player deployment. I think the story of that game was, well, first of all, Ja also looked exhausted again. He had 7 turnovers. Ja had 7 turnovers. He was not at his most efficient. He was great in the first quarter. He made that big shot. Like, Ja scored 29 points. He missed 2 free throws at the end. Like, I don't know that 39 minutes of Ja would have gotten better play. I thought he was a little ragged as it was. 7 turnovers, missed foul shots at the end. I think that team's a problem for them. And here, weirdly enough, they couldn't stop him. Like they
weren't really answering either.
They scored. Houston was 11 of 16 in the fourth quarter. And Jalen Green was unbelievable. By the way, Jalen Green is not the red Jalen Green that the rest of the league sees every night.
No, 42.
Like, at all. Amen Thompson was great. Jalen Green was great. They got to the rim, it felt like, effortlessly. This time it wasn't Sengun. They did a better job. But, and Brevin was talking about it. He said, you know, they were going over screens, just basically over half court, and the guards would get downhill and they'd get effortlessly to the rim. They could not stop Houston, and Houston has a bevy of. It's funny because they don't have Luka, right?
Yeah,
you know they don't have. They don't have superstars on that team, right? They don't.
No.
They just have a bunch of good athletic players. They don't foul. That's a problem for the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies, 25 fouls. Houston, 16.
Yeah.
They get offensive rebounds. They don't foul. And they sort of overwhelm the Grizzlies physically. It's just a problem. And I think that is, to me, if you micro criticize or hope that Taylor Jenkins tweaks the way he does things. Big picture, Grizzlies are on pace. They have 25 wins. Next game's 41, right? Aren't they? Have they played 40 games? Play San Antonio.
They have played 40 games.
So they play San Antonio. If they win that game, they are on a 52-win pace.
Yep.
He has once again, with a spate of injuries, another holy crap, he's out again, injury season, exceeded the projected win total from Las Vegas. On pace to exceed. He is overachieving this year. And so the micro criticisms of Taylor Jenkins, while perfectly, I'm happy to entertain them, and I'll be interested to see what Chris thinks about them. I think Taylor Jenkins is doing a good job with this team. And that is where I fundamentally come down on that. I think the bigger question is, how good is this roster? How does this roster match up against a team like Houston, a physical team like Houston? And more crucially, what does one do about it? What were you going to bring up?
So the other moment that I would submit, because I agree with everything you said there, but also at the end of the third quarter with about maybe a little under 2 minutes left, I think the Grizzlies extended the lead to 13. The Rockets go on a 9-1 run to close out the half, including hitting, or close out the quarter, including hitting a three from the corner at the buzzer. And that took it from a 13-point game to a 5-point game in like 90 seconds. Right. And all of a sudden, you get into, okay, we're playing with a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden, this is a two-possession game. Like, I thought that was key for the Rockets.
And that wasn't particularly focused on, there's no player deployment underneath that. That was just a good run by the Rockets.
Correct. I do think that the Grizzlies, we've talked about it, and I think Chris has mentioned this. If you're putting the 30 NBA teams all up on, like, if you're looking at the rosters, the Grizzlies are not going to be one of the most athletic teams. I think the Rockets are a bad matchup for them because the Rockets are supremely athletic. Like, I don't know how skilled, like, I don't know how amazing, like, they're clearly sitting here at 26-12. They're not a bad basketball team. But I think what's going to always give them problems is length and athleticism for everything that you just laid out, because they don't foul. And
here's the truth. This is sort of how the Grizzlies are built. What do they have? They have Ja and Dez, two of their best players, are, let's be honest, not athletic marvels.
No.
Right? They're not. Neither one of them is a defensive stopper. Neither, you know, they're Dez is okay. Ja is maybe marginally better.
Ja's twitchy, but it's not like Ja's a physical specimen.
He seems to try more in the defensive end. Yeah. He is not a good defender, and Dez is not, you know, is not your he's not Dylan Brooks, right?
He's not the biggest, strongest, fastest.
In terms of that. So you have that, and then you have Jaren, who is a wonderful basketball player, but not a glass eater, you know,
sure.
Physical. You wouldn't say he imposes himself physically. He does in different ways, blocking shots, getting to the rim. Like, I'm not criticizing Jaren at all, but he doesn't help you with the rebounding stuff, right? Whatever. Then you've got a rookie center who, there are different perspectives on. He was better last night, honestly. He was better last night. He also had 2 points last night. One of the things that you thought that Zach Edey would give you would be, okay, not a perfect player, but he's going to be a problem offensively. He's going to be someone you have to deal with, right? He hasn't
done. Yeah, and I thought he'd give you some rebounds, and he
yeah,
did.
Yeah, but I yeah. Do, yeah, that's true. And he has. Like that, he has. He's actually not at all a problem offensively. Like, he does not create problems for the other team on the offensive end. Anyway, and then you got another rookie who's been really good. But so the question is, what do you do about this? And like, the player that everyone wants to go and acquire, Cam Johnson, he'll help you with the shooting. He's not that either, though. Like, he's not that either. And it's why it seems like, it can sometimes seem like a wish against wish to be saying, Vince Williams Jr., Marcus Smart, Gigi Jackson. But I do think that's what you are looking at. You're looking at,
I mean, those are probably your deadline deals.
Like, literally, if you were to line up, who are the toughest players on this team? Okay, on this roster. Who are the toughest players on this roster? Who do you want to go into a fist fight with, right? Like Job wants to get into the fist fight, but let's be honest, he's not that guy, right?
No, I do not. He's not. I mean, honestly, the three that come to mind to me are, in some order, Marcus, Vince, and Edie.
That's probably right, honestly. But two of the three are out.
Correct.
And again, there's massive questions about both of them.
Yeah.
Marcus Smart has not been particularly good since he's been a Grizzly, and he's been unhealthy since he's been.
He,
has been,
he certainly
he's
been hasn't been
good, and he hasn't been available. But who do you want in a fist fight? Maybe it's Marcus Smart. And Vince Williams, same thing. Like, Vince Williams, again, he was what he was last year. We just haven't seen him this year. To the extent we did see him, he was rusty offensively. He was doing the other things that he does. And so, are you really, like, I don't know, are you willing to give up two or three firsts and the ability to sign Santi someday? Because that plays into this, too. Like, if you bring in a contract like Cam Johnson, are you kissing Santi goodbye, ultimately? And Gigi Jackson, or whatever young player you're going to give in addition to your picks to get the Nets to do it, to get Cam Johnson so you're not particularly tougher, more physical. Like, he's not a lockdown defender. He's an experienced player. He's played well in the playoffs before, and he's a great shooter. The problem is here is I don't know. It seems like faint hope to say, well, the answer is getting Vince, Gigi. And again, Gigi's not a glass eater, but he is physical. He's a physically gifted guy.
Yes. He's got size and
life. He looks like the Rockets look.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it may seem like a faint hope to say, oh, those guys are going to, the cavalry is going to come, and that's going to, but I don't know that there's a better hope. I also don't know that this is such a disaster. They were in another one possession game with the Rockets. It feels aggravating, frustrating, all of that. It's also true that Jalen Green doesn't normally go for 42.
I kind of felt the reverse like I did on Saturday. I felt like the Grizzlies escaped Minnesota, and I'm not saying that the Grizzlies didn't do things to win the game. But like that felt like to me, when you're watching it, this is a game that Minnesota should win. Last night, I felt like that was a game the Grizzlies should win. They went on two games on the road, and they split them.
Yeah.
I will say, though, like to your point, though, about moves, I mean, that's part of, like, NBA cultures, everyone just gets obsessed with fantasy trades.
No. I'm all for trying to improve this team.
I'm with you. It's also why, though, and I know a lot of it happened over Christmas, so we didn't talk about it here. Of all the rumored deals, the only one that like I was like, okay, I'm for that was Dorian Finney-Smith. Because I thought Dorian Finney-Smith, like with Butler, I think they're, if it's just truly a rental, that's great. But you have this $50 or $50 million player option looming, and I'm going to believe it when I see it when he doesn't exercise it. So you've got that issue. And then come late playoff, like, who's got the ball? Like, with Dorian Finney-Smith, I felt like, okay, this consolidates a problem. You have a crowd at the wing. This is a guy that can play defense. He can give you some shooting. That was one that, like, I was all in on. Like, that made sense to me. Everything else to me just kind of feels like you're kind of just tweaking, or you're just making a deal to say we did something.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back. We had an NFL game last night to talk about as well. More NFL coaching rumors, moves, all of that. We'll revisit the Grizzlies once again when we talk to Chris Harrington. I'll be fascinated to see what he has to say about all this. We'll talk to him at straight up 10 o'clock. And then no Fish on Friday on Tuesday, sadly. Instead, it is our analytics department, Peter Calkins, is going to join us in the last segment. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on a Tuesday, 92.9 FM, ISBN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. More Grizzlies talk when Chris Harrington joins the program straight up at 10 o'clock. Do you have any predictions, Jeffrey? You've been listening and talking to Chris Harrington for a while. What's Chris going to say?
It was a close game on the road, and you win one, you lose one. I would think something along those lines. Although I would not be surprised if he does mention the reason why the Rockets are a bad matchup.
Oh, no. He's been saying that all along. So he'll 100%. I think he'll underscore the physicality question, matchup physicality. What's he going to say about it? Is he going to come down on the side of fire Taylor Jenkins? Taylor Jenkins is the problem. That period of deployment, minutes deployment, is why they lost? Or is he going to say that? Is he going to poo-poo it? He doesn't poo-poo. Those were words he wouldn't use.
Yeah. Like, I guess the question is, will he dismiss it? I think what he would point out is, well, Ja played a season high last night, and the reason why Jaren was not on the floor was foul trouble.
I think so, but we'll see. Okay. There was another sort of. That was disappointing, wasn't it?
No, because I talked myself into the Rams.
Oh. Yeah. You wagered on the Rams?
Oh, yeah.
So there was nothing disappointing. You don't have the same just fan reaction. I'll be honest. I was a little late to get to that game, and by the time I tuned in, it was over. It was, that was a throttling.
Yeah. So obviously the big discussion is going to be Darnold. I'm going to take up for Darnold a little bit here. When you can't block, nothing works.
Okay. So they could not block. And by the way, my beloved Bills were just overwhelmed by the Rams. I've seen, now again, the end of the season wasn't, but the Rams went from 1-4 to put themselves in playoff contention, in the playoffs, not playoff contention, with a hell of a run.
Yes.
And that defensive line, like, that's, by the way, a strategy. They go out, and some of these things on draft day seem a little clever. Like, you know what we're going to do? We need, you know, we don't have Von Miller anymore. Let's be honest. Nobody has Von Miller anymore, like that Von Miller. You know, the Bills technically do, but he's not Von Miller.
He was pretty good.
He was better. He was a little better. But anyway, so we don't have Von Miller anymore. We got to do something. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to draft Jared Verse in the first round, and then we're going to get Brandon Fisk, Braden, and they've worked together already at Florida State, and they're going to be able to just come in here and do what they did at Florida State. And you're like, that sounds too clever. Damn if it hasn't worked. 100%.
Well, on top of that, it's almost Verse like,
is a monster.
By the way, how's Florida State's defense looking?
Well, you wonder what's the problem with Florida State? Those two dudes missing, Keon Coleman missing, you know, like, there
were, Jordan Travis was a good college quarterback.
And Jordan Travis was a good quarterback. Yeah, there were pros on that team.
Yeah.
Like, there were pros on that team. And, by the way, transfer portal pros.
Yeah.
Like, the transfer portal, Keon Coleman comes from Michigan State, Jared Verse comes from Albany, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, he hit in the transfer portal, and this year he utterly whiffed in the transfer portal.
Yes.
Same approach, right?
Yeah.
Like, when you have criticized the Memphis Tigers for when they hired Ryan,
mm-hmm.
your fundamental criticism was, and again, Ryan's doing a fine job, whatever. Your fundamental criticism was they had a system and they abandoned it.
Yes.
Right? The system was go identify the hot young assistant and do that. And they abandoned it. Well, here, Florida State used the same system. We're going to go get players out of the portal. It just didn't work. So, but anyway, it felt like this can't work for the Rams. But sure enough, did work for the Rams. 9 sacks last night. They could not block. They're missing their tackle. Like, Darisaw is their tackle who got injured. That has been a huge.
I believe he actually got hurt against, was it the Rams?
Been a huge part. Like, no one ever thinks, yeah, really, one offensive tackle is going to ruin your offense? There's been a dramatic difference since he went out. The problem is, though, and this was pointed out on the telecast, Sam Darnold also hangs on to the damn ball.
Oh, yeah. No, he is I have to see it open to throw it.
Yeah.
And I also think, this was true last week, and I think this was true this week. I did not think O'Connell adjusted to their offensive line issues. Like, in the end, they still kept trying to throw it down the field. I thought they had to get into more, like, quick game and trying to get the ball out of his hands quickly. Although, in fairness to O'Connell, he might sit there and go, you know what, that's not what Sam Darnold does best.
Okay, so what do you do if you are the Vikings and if you are, you got J.J. McCarthy, who's been sitting there, Sam Darnold, and Kevin O'Connell said this last night. He said, we look at his whole body of work, and his whole body of work was terrific, wildly overachieved what anyone expected of him. It just so happens that in the last two games, hell, I mean, he was dreadful last night, and then against Detroit, quarterback rating 17.4, a nifty 17.4. So over the last two games, he has lost himself a lot of money. That might be good for the Vikings. Here's the thing. If you're another team, I guess I would put it this way. If you are another team, are you really going to say, answer to our problems is Sam Darnold?
So I think you have to sit there and go, it's not a Sam Darnold question, it's a market question. What else is out there? Because you and I were talking about this, like, we used the example of the Jets. Like, what are the Jets going to do? Like, do you... He's a competent starter.
I think we can agree Sam Darnold isn't the answer for the Jets.
No, I agree on that. But yes. What I'm saying is,
right.
But what happens now is there's a lot of teams that are going to need somebody. Like, what are the Giants going to do? Like, what are the Jets going to do?
What are the Raiders going to do?
What are the Steelers going to do? What are the Raiders going to do? Like, there's a lot of these questions, and I would be hesitant to say.
What are the Saints going to do?
I mean, that's. Assuming Derek Carr, I guess, is going to go on the market too. That's kind of like, so if you're Darnold, you probably want to go on the market. But if you're the Vikings and everyone's like, well, they can franchise tag him, that's still what, a $40 million hit?
Can you reach a 2-year cheap deal with the Vikings? $20 million a year?
My guess is no.
You can't because he won't take it?
My guess is you maybe
don't like. Do we know JJ McCarthy is going to be so hot?
No, and also we don't even know if he's healthy. He had a setback in the knee, so we don't know that. So they do have a little bit of leverage in the sense that if the Vikings are telling the truth and they want him back, they don't have a for sure option right behind him. Like, we don't know that JJ McCarthy's good. We do know that. I still think $20 million is way too cheap. Like, could you maybe do the fake three-year deal that's like cuttable and maybe it's $90 million? Okay, maybe you can talk me into that. So then you save probably 10 off of the franchise tag, but two at 40 seems unlikely. I mean, that's kind of what Garner Minshew got.
That's kind of what
Garner Minshew got.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the other question is, like, well, okay, I don't, they brought in Daniel Jones.
If I were a Vikings fan, I would want Sam Darnold back. If I were a fan of any other team, I would not be happy if Sam Darnold is being presented to me as the answer. And the reason that I'm a Vikings fan is I want him back at an affordable cost is I know I still have J.J. McCarthy, and I know I have the things around Sam Darnold, the head coach, the wide receivers, that make him at least... in most moments, big picture, effective. And so I can win with him and J.J. McCarthy. I got, you know what it is? I got two lottery tickets.
And I also think if Darnold's honest with himself, especially when you've bounced around and you've been through the
gamut. Be at the place where you've had success. Stay. Take less money to stay. And then if you get beat out by J.J. McCarthy, whatever, then you go on your next adventure.
Like, has maybe Cousins changed the thought process, though? Like, in the end... Cousins got a bunch of money, and it's guaranteed, you know, the first two.
I was wondering which way you meant that. Like, does Cousins change the thought process that, see what happens when you lose Minnesota? It's not so great out there. Or is it, you can leave Minnesota, cash in, and life is beautiful.
Right.
Even if your situation stinks.
Right. And that, what are the odds
would
of Cousins
Darnold do it again? Yes, he would, because
yeah,
the money.
Yeah, I think so.
Because he'd do it just because of the money.
Yes.
Not because it was better for his career.
No, but it's a business.
It was worse for his career.
Yeah.
Depending on how you measure a career.
Yeah.
All right. Other news yesterday. This happened after our show. The Cowboys have moved on from Mike McCarthy.
Indeed. And by the way, I think your prediction was correct in your assessment of the situation.
They used the week to see if they could reach an agreement. And that's not the same as being petty.
No.
It's just saying
they negotiated.
They used the week. We want to be sole negotiating with him for a week, and then they couldn't reach a deal, and so onward we go. And this raises a whole bunch of fun possibilities, including the one that, of course, everyone's talking about. Deion has spoken, didn't interview, but he has spoken with Jerry.
Yeah, and obviously, it's like if a team is going to do that, it's the Cowboys in agreement. I'm still a little skeptical on the, because Deion has a history of putting out, I've interviewed with this team, I've interviewed with that team, whatnot, and it's usually never been true. And converse that with the Colorado thing happened very quietly. Like, remember, it was like all of a sudden, like you started hearing it like maybe like 2 or 3 days before.
He would take the Cowboys job, would he not?
I would think so. The only question I have is, like, money. Jerry, like, are the Cowboys going to pay him? Like, he's got, what is it, $8 million?
Does Jerry want to share the spotlight with Deion?
He loves Deion.
He loves Deion, but does he want to share the spotlight with Deion?
I think if someone that is a quote unquote cowboy, and I just always think back to that 30 for 30 on the Cowboys when Jerry was telling the story of being on the plane with Steven and they're going to get Deion from San Francisco, and Steven's like, "What are you doing?" When he's just like, "Steven, I want Deion Sanders. Like, I'm going to go get Deion Sanders." Right, like, right. Like, I do think when it is a cowboy, like, he has a different emotional connection, because, like, he really wanted the Jason Garrett thing to work. Like, beyond the level of, like, I think most people would sit there and go, Jason Garrett, what, he was there, like, 3-4 years? He was there 9 seasons.
But you got the sense that Jimmy Johnson became too big for Jerry.
Yeah,
right?
But that was also very early, and they had a pre-existing relationship, and then further, that's a point in Jerry's career where Jimmy's getting all the credit, and he wanted some credit himself. And
where are you going to pencil in Deion to the Cowboys?
I'm putting Deion to the Cowboys at like 7%.
It's wildly unlikely, right? It's unlikely. And then Mike McCarthy to where? Bears? Suddenly?
I can't get the Freeman thing out of my mind. Like, the other thing about
Marcus Freeman to the Bears.
Yeah, because number one,
Kevin Warren keeps talking about surprises.
He played in the NFL. Like, that is, there's always this other question of, like, what do these guys want? And Marcus has a young family. I think they have like 5 or 6 kids. In terms of quality of life, the NFL is better.
So it's funny how this works. This, by the way, yesterday I went through the Athletics projections, one man's projections of who's going to lend where, end where.
Yeah.
The reason you know nobody knows is that I'm now going through the ESPN Today's projections, right? And you'll see how wildly different they are. There are some similarities. ESPN Today has Flores going to the Bears, with the caveat being, young quarterback. Doesn't Flores have sort of a shaky history with young quarterbacks? Look what happened with Tua.
I mean, the question would be, has he learned?
Right. Has he learned? Kellen Moore to the Cowboys. I do think he should be the favorite, don't you?
That kind of jives. Although, Kellen got fired.
That's the thing. He did get fired. They wanted to move on from Kellen Moore. This broke my heart. Joe Brady to the Jags. And the reason there is, although Robert Saleh is mentioned, the reason there is,
I kind of like that,
Jags keeping their GM, so you can't get a coach who's going to have come in with really high profile, right?
Yep.
And Joe Brady, for whatever success he's had this year in Buffalo, he isn't a guy who can demand control, right? He's not Mike Vrabel here, right? And so he could come in, quarterback who's kind of a mess. I don't hate it. I hate it, but I don't hate it.
I don't hate it. I would also tell Brady, if I'm taking that job, Balky's got to be gone.
Well, the argument would be he's only getting the job because Balky's still there.
I would tell him, go stay. By the way, guess what? If you're going to go back next year, guess who you still have?
Ben Johnson to the Raiders.
I mean, that seems to be the pieces that are falling
seems
into place.
Seems to be what everyone's pointing to.
Correct.
Right? Because Brady's making the push, going to whatever, sell him.
Well, don't forget, Brady's got the Lions game this week.
Aaron Glenn to the Saints. That's one that everyone is
get a good contract.
There's a commonality there as well. And to the Jets, Arthur Smith.
I think Arthur's a good coach. I want to be very clear on that. And I'm not saying that because of the city that I live in. I think Arthur actually is a good coach. Like, he got production out of Fields. He got production.
That makes a lot of sense for the Jets. You know why? Woody Johnson would like a Smith.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Smith and Johnson.
No, but he's a big corporate dude. He's a, you know.
I just don't know if
wouldn't
I want to
like
go
an Arthur Smith?
I guess I'm looking at it from like the Arthur Smith perspective.
Yeah, but Arthur Smith, if you're Arthur Smith, you just want another job, don't you?
Do you
think you can bide your time? who's your quarterback? The problem is he was done in Atlanta.
Exactly,
because he
the
never
exact
had a freaking quarterback.
Scenarios.
And now he's going to go to, and by the way, whatever you think of Tua, everyone else in the AFC has a quarterback. AFC East has a quarterback, and you don't.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you got Drake May, you got Tua. Not perfect. One's young, one's injured. And then you got, the Destructo in Buffalo. So everyone else is a quarterback and you don't.
And you have chaos.
So anyway, that's the latest on that. Anything else? Catch your eye on the NFL. We got to take a break here in a moment and talk to Chris Harrington.
No, I think we got a good divisional weekend. I'm hopeful.
Well, I do think the Rams-Eagles is interesting. And by the way, you know who else hangs onto the ball? Jalen Hurts hangs onto the ball.
Yep. Now he can run with it.
He can also run with it. Yeah. 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 Donald cannot.